Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Vihari Gopijana Balaba Kiri Bharadhauti Gopijana Malaba Giribaradhauti Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Yamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Vihari Gopijana Vallabha Giribhara Dhati Gopi Jana Balaba Kiri Bharadhauti Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Vihari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parvatakacharya also Teda Sitashi Shimad His Divine Grace of Ayachananda Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Gaudi Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shibasiti Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radhakrishna Govikavata Sayam Kun Radhakunda Giri Govanan Kijai Vrindavan Kijai Maturam Kijai Jagadatha Swami Kijai Yamunamai Kijai Shrimati Talasi Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi Kijai Gaur Premilanda Hari Hari Bo All glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Hari Bol. Okay, so, Om Ganat, Miranda Shah, Gananjana, Shlakaya, Taksura, Meditam, Yena Tasmai, Shigadve Noha. So I offer my most respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Prabhupada, would so kindly open my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Okay, so we are continuing with Bhagavad Gita study, text 3 in the 4th chapter. Here we go. Let us go. Let's see, clear the screen. And we are ready to roll. So, text 3 is actually, all these texts are very important. Why do I say text is important? Because every text is important. Sevayam maya teja yoga prukta paratana bhakto sime sakachi ti rahasyam yetad uttamam saha, the same, eva, certainly I am this, maya me. Te unto you, adya today yoga, the science of yoga, proktaha, spoken puratana, very old, bhakta, devotee, asi you are, may my sakha, friend, cha also, iti, therefore, rahasyam, mystery, he certainly etat, this, uttamam, transcendental. So that very ancient science of the relationship with the Supreme is today told by me to you, because you are my devotee as well as my friend, and can therefore understand the transcendental mystery of this science. So Krishna is actually referring to, when he says that very ancient science, he's referring to the previous explanation of how he taught to the sun god. Vivaswan, Vivaswan taught to Manu, Manu taught to Ikshvaku, and it got passed down through the time, through the disciplic succession. So, and Krishna is saying that actually I'm going to teach you the same thing because you're my friend. So, to be a friend, one should, to have a friend, one should be a friend. And to be Krishna's friend means several different things. One thing it means is that Krishna is your friend because he's giving you everything. Nicho nichanam, chaitanas chaitanam, eko bahunam, yavadadati kamam. He's supplying everything, so he's your best friend. He's in your heart, etc. Another reason why Krishna is specifically Arjuna's friend is because that's his eternal relationship. Some of us have the eternal relationship of friendship with Krishna. Some of us have the eternal relationship of parental with Krishna. We become Krishna's parents. And some of us have the eternal relationship as Krishna's lovers or assistants of lovers. They are called gopis. And some of us have the eternal relationship of Krishna's servants, just serving Krishna in different ways. So, you will see what your relationship is when you get purified. But to try to guess it beforehand without the proper adhikar, which means the proper right to understand it, can end up in a disaster. So that's called sahaja, taking things very cheaply. So Prabhupada explains in the purport, there are two classes of men, namely the devotee and the demon. There's that heavy word again. So try to understand when Prabhupada uses the word demon, or as Prabhupada would pronounce it, demon. He's not referring to someone necessarily with fangs and a tail with a little hook at the end like a devil, or someone who looks horrible, but someone who actually rejects the supremacy of the Lord, the idea of following the directions of Krishna. So it's heavy, yes, but it's not, doesn't exactly have the same implicit meaning that we have in the Western world for demon. You know, if I called someone a demon, it just means they're probably one of those lizard guys with a tongue that goes out, flicks out like that. That's not what's being referred to here. And ultimately, no one is a demon. What do I mean? People act as demons, but ultimately everyone is a devotee. And that's how I see. When I come across people, I understand they're acting in a way that's counterproductive to their welfare and the welfare of others. And Prabhupada calls them demons. That's right, because he understands their activities are such. But by nature, they're not demons. By nature, they are devotees, parts and parcels of Krishna. So it's important to distinguish or to understand properly what we mean by utilizing the term demon. You know, just like if I say before I joined the Krishna conscious movement, I was a demon, you know, then you picture that I was killing people, doing all sorts of growth, which I never did. So it's not like that. It's just that I was doing things that were bad for me. That's all. Basically, that's what it means. So as the Bible says, hate the sin, not the sinner. So we're giving a name to a person who is acting counterproductively to his own welfare. We're calling that a demon, but he's actually not a demon. Try to understand that, because people get confused when they hear the word demon, because they think it's a very divisive term. Oh, if you're not a devotee, you're a demon. Your teacher is a demon. The government officials, they're demons. No. and even goes so far as your family, demons, and we're the good guys. No, this is not a binary thing. It's kind of funny anyway when people use it like that. It's a very immature thing. We're all devotees, and some of us know a little bit more that we're devotees than others. All right? And we all have the partial lower influence, and we all have partial good influence. Oh, maybe not everybody has partial good influence. Or not everybody has partial bad influence. But if you don't have any partial bad influence, you're a pure devotee. And if you don't have any partial good influence, you're sleeping. So, the Lord select, we're talking about the three modes of nature. If one's just in the mode of ignorance, they're not active. The Lord selected Arjuna. I mean, sometimes I joke with people. Sometimes, you know, some of my disciples, they look like monsters, and I call them, oh, you look demonic. So anyway, the Lord selected, that's a joke. The Lord selected Arjuna as a recipient of this great science owing to his being a devotee of the Lord. But for the demon, is the word, it's not possible to understand this great mysterious science. There are a number of editions of this great book of knowledge. Some of them have commentaries by the devotees, and some have commentaries by the demons. There's the word again. So in other words, people who are not in favor of worshiping God. So that you can just substitute that for every time you hear the word demon. I just don't want everyone to just like, let's say, take the implicit or the explicit meaning of demons and not understand what Prabhupada is saying. Commentation by the devotees. So in other words, when Prabhupada was meeting with someone who was not a devotee, it's not that generally he called them demons, unless he was joking with them, just like sometimes with a professor. He would talk to a professor and, you know, Prabhupada would say, oh, you're a demon, like that. But it's different. It's a little bit different. Prabhupada meant they are acting in a way that is not good for their Krishna consciousness, that's acting against Krishna's directions. Basically, that's what it means. Commentation by the devotees is real, whereas that of the demons is useless. Arjuna accepts Sri Krishna as the Supreme Personality of God, and any commentary in the Gita following the footsteps of Arjuna is real devotional service to the cause of this great science. The demonic, there's another word, however, do not accept Lord Krishna as he is. Instead, they concoct something about Krishna and mislead general readers from the path of Krishna's instructions. Here is a warning about such misleading paths. One should try to follow the disciplic succession from Arjuna and thus be benefited by this great science of Srimad Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada here is specifically making reference to people who comment or translate the Bhagavad Gita, and they just take the indirect meanings of different words to try to prove their own points regarding their own philosophy, which is really against Krishna. But Gita is a theological work. It directly talks about God, directly mentions that Krishna is God. And there's no doubt about it when you actually read the Gita as it is. And that's why Srila Prabhupada gave us the Bhagavad Gita with word-by-word translations. So you know how Prabhupada arrived at his translations. Okay, so text 4. Arjuna vacha aparam bhavato janma param janma vivasvataha katamitar janiyang pamhado praktavaniti. Arjuna vacha, Arjuna said, aparam junior bhavataha your janma birth, param superior janma birth, vivasvataha the sun god, katam how he taught this. Vijaniyam, shall I understand, Tuam you, Adao, in the beginning? Bhagavan instructed it thus. Translation, Arjuna said, the sun god Vivaswan is senior by birth to you. How am I to understand in the beginning? You instructed the science to him. In other words, Arjuna knew, at least in Krishna's present appearance, who was his mother and father, exactly the year he was born, what was the circumstances of his birth. So, you know, he knew exactly that. And more or less, Arjuna and Krishna are of equal age. That's why they're friends. When Krishna would meet Yudhisthira, he would offer obeisances to Yudhisthira, Arjuna's elder brother, because Yudhisthira was older. Bhimsen was older. Nakula and Sahadev, the two younger twins, who were brothers of Arjuna, were younger. So Krishna interacted differently. So more or less he was the same age as Arjuna. So, and this Vivaswan, and Krishna speaking to Vivaswan, was so long ago that it actually, in one sense, would have been impossible from Arjuna's perspective for Krishna to have spoken to him. Because Krishna was, Prabhupada said, about 125 years old when he was speaking to Arjuna in the battle of Kurukshetra. People lived longer period at that time. And you're talking about millions of years before. You know, let's say, I would say, well, I had a conversation with Abraham Lincoln the other day. Or anyway, I taught Bhagavad Gita to Abraham Lincoln about 200 years ago. You would say, what? That's not possible. You were born, Maharaj, in 1949. You know, what's happening here? And this is what Arjuna is asking. You know, what's happening? You are far younger. Very, very interesting point here. So what is he thinking about Krishna? You know, how is this possible? So Prabhupada explains that Arjuna is accepted devotee of the Lord, so how could he not believe Krishna's words? The fact is that Arjuna is not inquiring for himself, but for those who do not believe in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for the demons who do not like the idea that Krishna should be accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For them only Arjuna inquires on this point as if he himself were not aware of the Supreme of the Personality Godhead or Krishna. As it will be evident from the 10th chapter, Arjuna knew perfectly well that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the fountainhead of everything, and the last word in transcendence. Of course, Krishna also appeared as the son of Devaki on this earth. How Krishna remained the same Supreme Personality of Godhead, the eternal original person, is very difficult for an ordinary man to understand. Therefore, to clarify this point, Arjuna put this question before Krishna so that he himself could speak authoritatively. That Krishna is the supreme authority is accepted by the whole world, not only at present, but from time immemorial, and the demons alone reject him. Anyway, since Krishna is the authority accepted by all, Arjuna put this question before him in order that Krishna would describe himself without being depicted by the demons, who are always trying to distort him in a way understandable to the demons and their followers. It is necessary that everyone, for his own interest, know the science of Krishna. Therefore, when Krishna himself speaks about himself, it is auspicious for all the worlds. To the demons, such explanations by Krishna himself may appear to be strange because the demons always study Krishna from their own standpoint. That's called projection. But those who are devotees heartily welcome the statements of Krishna when they are spoken by Krishna himself. The devotees will always worship such authoritative statements of Krishna because they are always eager to know more and more about him. The atheists who consider Krishna an ordinary man may, in this way, come to know that Krishna is superhuman, that he is Satchitananda Vigraha, that is, he has a body made of eternity, bliss, and knowledge, the eternal form of bliss and knowledge, that he is transcendental and that he is above the domination of the modes of material nature and above the influence of time and space. A devotee of Krishna like Arjuna is undoubtedly above any misunderstanding of the transcendental position of Krishna. Arjuna's putting this question to the Lord is simply an attempt by the devotee to defy the atheistic attitude of persons who consider Krishna to be an ordinary human being subject to the modes of material nature. So, obviously, Arjuna is acting like he didn't know for our benefit. But there's actually more to this explanation than meets the eye, because Krishna did appear from the womb of Devaki, and that was approximately 125 years before this. So, you know, how did he appear so far in the past? Let me turn off my phone so I don't have to deal with that. How did he appear so far in the past? That's the question. And Krishna's going to explain this in this verse. So, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Bahuni Mev Yatitani Janhani Tapacharya Tanyaham Veda Sarvani Natvam Veta Parantapa. Sri Bhagavanavacha, the personality of God, it said, Bahuni, may, many, sorry, may of mine, Yatitani, have passed Janmani births, Tava of yours, Cha, and also Arjuna, O Arjuna. Tani, those, aham, I, Veda, do know. Sarvani, all, na, not, Twam, you, Veda, no. Parantapa, O subduer of the enemy. So translation, the personality of God had said, many, many births both you and I have passed. I can remember all of them, but you cannot. In other words, Krishna, this is a partial answer right now, but Krishna appears from time to time in every yuga. There's different types of incarnations, actually. The better word for this is avatars. And he's the same person, and you can say he's taken birth, but actually he's not taken birth. Because when we take birth, we get a specific body. When Krishna comes, he doesn't get a body, he comes in his original self-same form. So the verse in the Gita that states this, what is that? Ajopi son of Yatma Bhutaram Isharopishan, Prakatim Swamadistaya Sambhavami Atmamaya, I come in my original form. But he manifests that original form differently. So here it's explained in the Brahma Samhita, in the fifth chapter of the Brahma Samhita, text 33. Prabhupada said, we have information of many, many incarnations of the Lord. It is stated there, Dvaita Chutam Anadam Ananta Rupam Adhyam Purana Purusham Navayovanam Cha. Vedeshu Durlabham Adurlabham Atma Bhaktau Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, Krishna, who is the original person, absolute, infallible, without beginning. Although expanded into unlimited forms, he is still the same original, the oldest, and the person always appearing as a fresh youth. Such eternal, blissful, all-knowing forms of the Lord are usually not understood by even the Vedic scholars, but they are always manifest to pure, unalloyed devotees. Just one point here is when Krishna was in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he looked something like a 16-year-old boy. In other words, did not get old, you know, after 125 years. Even in other yugas, you know, you tend to show some wear and tear. So Krishna didn't show any wear and tear. I mean, and I'm not 125, and there's so much wear and tear already. Also stated in the Brahma Sangita, 5th chapter, text 39, Ramani Murti, Murtishu kala niyamena tishtan anavataram akarod bhuvaneshu kintu Krishna swayam samabhavat paraman bhumanyo govinda adi purusham tamaham vishami. I worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda Krishna, who is always situated in various incarnations such as Raman, Nishinga, and many sub-incarnations as well, but who is the original Personality of Godhead known as Krishna and who incarnates personally also. So there's descriptions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and also Prabhupada's book, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya about the different categories of incarnations. One type is the Purusha avatar. And that Purusha avatars are avatars like Mahavishnu, who breathes out, the universe has come out from him, the Garbhadaksha Vishnu, who sits or lays in the Garbhadaksha ocean in each and every universe, and he creates everybody, specifically Lord Brahma from his navel. And then there's the Shiradaksha Vishnu, who resides in everyone's heart. They're all the same person. Krishna's the same person as all these different incarnations, but they're acting differently simultaneously and looking differently simultaneously. Pretty good. And there's also what we call Leela avatars. Leela avatar means avatars that come down just to have a good time, who play like Krishna and Ram and like that. Then there's Yuga avatars. Yuga avatars means that in each and every Yuga, like today, we are in Kali Yuga. Previously, we were in Dwapara Yuga. Before that, Treta Yuga. Before that, Satya Yuga. In each and every Yuga cycle, which is a time cycle, then the Lord appears in a specific day. It's the primary avatar in that particular yuga, who teaches the yuga dharma. That means the process of self-realization in that particular yuga. So in this particular yuga we're in, Kali Yuga, the process of self-realization is Krishna Nam Sankirtan, the chanting of Krishna's name. So that's the yuga avatar. Then there's the guna avatar. The guna avatar is the avatar that, let's say, is in charge of each mode of nature. And some of these are not directly Krishna. Some of them are empowered living entities, such as Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Lord Brahma is in charge of passion, Lord Shiva is in charge of ignorance, and Vishnu is in charge of goodness. So that's another type of avatar. Another type is the Shaktavesh avatar. Shaktavesh means that a specific entity, such as you, or let's say Prabhupada, who is actually empowered to carry out some specific function. And there's many different other Shaktavesh avatars. So Shaktavesh, actually the word means the Shakti or the power descends from the spiritual world and is manifest by a specific individual who is not Krishna in a ontological sense. That is, he's not Krishna, but he's acting on behalf of Krishna, being empowered by Krishna. So these are some of the different avatars or appearances, and some of them are what we call Vishnu Tattva, some of them are called Shiva Tattva, and some of them are Shakti Tattva. So Vishnu Tattva means directly Krishna, just acting a little differently. And Shakti Tattva means one of Krishna's energies who appears in this material world. I'm going to give an example. Shakti Tattva incarnation is Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, who is a member of the Pancha Tattva. And Jiva Tattva means like a Jiva soul, like you, I, hopefully I'm speaking to Jiva souls there, are Jiva souls, and those Jiva souls are empowered. Prabhupada was empowered. He's a Jiva soul. And he was empowered to do amazing things on the Lord's behalf. So these are the different incarnations, and sometimes Krishna incarnates personally. The original aspect, when Krishna really lets his hair down and is at home, that's Krishna in Vrindavan. Okay? When Krishna gets more formal, then you got Mathura and Dwarka. And when Krishna gets really formal, you got the Vaikuntha planets. So it's the same person, just dressing up differently. Like, you know, sometimes I'm here at the temple, and I may dress in shorts to go swimming. That's really informal. But when you come to the temple, then hopefully I'll be dressed in a dhoti. And if we have some really special program, I'll be dressed in a dhoti that's pressed without all these wrinkles. So, but I'm the same person. So Krishna's the same person too. Of course, Krishna can manifest himself in different ways, not only the clothes, but the very external, let's say, viewpoint that people have of him, even though he's the same person. The Prabhupada would give the example sometimes of the Vaidurya stone, that you look at it from different angles, it looks differently, or certain, like a crystal, and a crystal chandelier. You just can look at things through the crystal. I used to do that with my mother's crystal chandelier, and look and twist it a little bit, and everything would look differently, or you can look at the world through different filters. Anyway. So here, actually, Prabhupada gives the same example I just gave. That's interesting. It shows that I am loyal to Prabhupada. And the Vedas also just said that the Lord, although one without a second manifests himself in innumerable forms, he's like the Vaidurya stone, which changes color yet still remains one. All those multiforms are understood by the pure unalloyed devotees, but not by a simple study of the Vedas, Vedeshu Durlabham Adurlabham Atmabhato, which basically means by studying the Vedas, it's very difficult to understand, but it's very easy if one is a devotee. Devotees like Arjuna are constant companions of the Lord, and whenever the Lord incarnates, the associate devotees also incarnate in order to serve the Lord in different capacities. Arjuna is one of these devotees, and this verse, it is understood that some millions of years ago when Lord Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to the sun god Vivasvan, Arjuna in a different capacity was also present. But the difference between the Lord and Arjuna is that the Lord remembered the incident, whereas Arjuna could not remember. That is the difference between the part and parcel of Vinati and the Supreme Lord. Although Arjuna is addressed here as mighty hero who could subdue his enemies, he is unable to recall what had happened in his various past births. Therefore, a living entity, however great he may be in the material estimation, can never equal the Supreme Lord. Anyone who is a constant companion of the Lord is certainly a liberated person, but he cannot be equal to the Lord. Remember that. The Lord is described in the Brahma Sanghita as infallible achyuta, which means that he never forgets himself, even though he is in material contact. He's dealing with the material world, but never influenced by the material world. Therefore, the Lord and the living entity can never be equal in all respects, even if the living entity is as liberated as Arjuna. Although Arjuna is a devotee of the Lord, he sometimes forgets the nature of the Lord, but by the divine grace, a devotee can at once understand the infallible condition of the Lord, whereas a non-devotee or a demon cannot understand this transcendental nature. Consequently, these descriptions in the Gita cannot be understood by demonic brains. Krishna remembered acts which were performed by him millions of years before, but Arjuna could not, despite the fact that both Krishna and Arjuna are eternal in nature. We may also note herein that a living entity forgets everything due to his change of body, but the Lord remembers because he does not change his Satchitananda body. He is Advaita, which means there is no distinction between his body and himself. Everything in relation to him is spirit, whereas the conditioned soul is different from his material body. And because the Lord's body and self are identical, his position is always different from that of the ordinary living entity, even when he descends to the material platform. The demons cannot adjust themselves to this transcendental nature of the Lord, which the Lord himself explains in the following verse. The next verse is actually quite important. In other words, Krishna remembers everything. He's perfect. He's omniscient. He's omnipresent. He's omnipotent. And none of us can be like that. We're just dependent on whatever Krishna wants us to know. That's it. Okay, next verse. Extremely important. Ajopi san avyatma putanam isuropi san prakritim sam adhishtaya Sambhavami Atmamaya, Aja, unborn, api, although, san, being so, aviya, without deterioration, Atma body, Bhutanam, of all those who are born, Ishvara, the Supreme Lord, api, although, san, being so, prakritim, in the transcendental form, swam, of myself, adhishtaya, being so situated, Sambhavami, I do incarnate Atmamaya by my internal energy. Translation. Although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. So, anyway, this explains it. Krishna is never born. He appears. And because he can arrange that his transcendental body looks like whatever he wants, it's the same body, and it's never changing, but he can, just like an expert person, this is just in the mundane sphere, can do some mime. I don't know if you've ever seen any of these mimes. They just can do things with their face without talking and manifest different moods, emotions, and their face looks a little bit different. Expert actors, or an expert actor can play different roles in different movies. You know, sometimes an actor may play the part of a, there was a word again, demon, and the other times he may play the part of a good guy. And so, just by makeup, same body, you know, he can color his hair, he can do all sorts of things with the makeup, and he's able to play different roles. But a pure devotee of Krishna understands, hey, that is Krishna, Keshavadrita, not a Hari Rupa. Krishna acting like a half man, half lion. Krishna acting like a boar, not a boring person, but a big boar, you know, pig type of person. Krishna acting as a fish. Wow. Krishna acting as a tortoise. Pretty good. So Krishna is the expert actor, and he has his own wardrobe and costumes, anything like that. So Krishna always comes as original transcendental form. So sometimes he makes believe he's a baby being born. And there's some stories that when Krishna made believe he was a baby, sometimes for some devotees, he appeared as a 16-year-old boy. And there's a story in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam where even as a little boy, Mother Yashoda looked in his mouth and she saw all the universes. So who can understand what it means to have a Satchitananda body? It is inconceivable for us. So Krishna appears in every millennium, and even more than once in a millennium. As we mentioned, he has so many different incarnations. He appears many times in every millennium in his original transcendental form. And in this millennium, or this age, Krishna appeared as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu a little over 500 years ago. And Krishna also appears in his original transcendental form in the holy names, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. But you don't see him, or maybe some of you see him, but in the name, it's perfect, complete, it's whole, it's eternally liberated, it's Satchitananda. So if you chant Krishna's names properly, you will realize that. So Krishna appears in different ways. It's like a man in his office looks a certain way, a man at home a certain way, a man doing his recreational activities does a certain thing. Just like I was speaking to my contractor, was it 2 days ago, and it turns out on the weekends he becomes a Harley Davidson fan, puts on his jacket. During the week he appears like a mild, peaceful person, and during the weekend he's like a Hell's Angel. So, same person. The Lord has spoken about the peculiarity of his birth. Although he may appear like an ordinary person, he remembers everything of his many, many past births. Whereas the common man cannot remember what he has done even a few hours before. If someone is asked what he did exactly at the same time one day earlier, it'd be very difficult for a common man to answer immediately. Of course, I can say I was giving Bhagavad Gita class anyway. But I wouldn't remember which verse I was dealing with exactly at this time. He would surely have to dredge his memory to recall what he was doing exactly at the same time one day before. And yet men often dare claim to be God or Krishna. One should not be misled by such meaningless claims. Then again, the Lord explains his prakriti, or his form. Prakriti means nature as well as swarup, or one's own form. Swa, one's own. Arupa means form. The Lord says that he appears in his own body. He does not change his body as the common living entity changes from one body to another. The conditioned soul may have one kind of body in the present birth, but he has a different body in the next birth. That's why those bones will not rise again at the day of judgment. They can't rise because the person's gone away and the bones have been eaten by the ants. They are gone. They done gone. So, in the material world, the living entity has no fixed body but transmigrates from one body to another. The Lord, however, does not do so. Whenever he appears, he does so in the same original body by his internal potency. In other words, Krishna appears in this material world in his original eternal form with two hands holding a flute. He appears exactly in his eternal body, uncontaminated by this material world. Actually, his spiritual body doesn't even have veins. The Upanishads state about spiritual bodies and Krishna's spiritual body, Ashnabi Ram, no veins. So, of course, I don't know if you can see my hand. There's so many veins. Terrible. Although he appears in the same transcendental body in the Lord of the universe, it still appears that he takes his birth like an ordinary living entity. And although his body does not deteriorate like a material body, it still appears that the Lord Krishna grows from childhood to boyhood and from boyhood to youth. But astonishingly enough, he never ages beyond youth. That's what I mentioned before. It's like 16, look like 16 years old in the battle of Kurukshetra. He had no physical problems, never had to go to a doctor. At the time of the battle, Kurukshetra, of course, there was one story. In Vrindavan one time, Krishna had a headache, didn't really have a headache, made believe he had a headache. And he said, the only thing that will cure me is the dust from my devotees' feet. And Narada Muni went around to different devotees and asked, do you want to give the dust from your feet to cure Krishna's headache? And everyone said, no, because I'll go to hell if I do that. And then Narada Muni went to the gopis, and they immediately took the dust to their feet to give to Krishna to cure his headache. And Narada said to them, aren't you afraid of going to hell? And the gopis said, we don't care about it. We simply want Krishna to be happy. This is pure love. So at the time of the battle of Kurukshetra, he had many grandchildren at home. Or in other words, he had sufficiently aged by material calculations. Still, he looked just like a young man, 20 or 25 years old. Other times, Prabhupada said 16. We never see a picture of Krishna in old age because he never grows old like us. Although he is the oldest person in the whole creation, past, present, future, neither his body nor his intelligence ever deteriorates or changes. Therefore, it is clear that in spite of his being in the material world, he is the same unborn, eternal form of bliss and knowledge, changeless in his transcendental body and intelligence. Factually, his appearance and disappearance are like the sun's rising, moving before us, and then disappearing from our eyesight. So it's not that the sun actually rises in one sense or appears. It was always there. It's our vision that sees the sun sometimes and doesn't see the sun. And the sun is never covered by clouds. We are covered by clouds. Sometimes we say, oh, the sun is covered by clouds, but that's just not reality. We're the ones covered by clouds, and therefore we cannot see the sun, but the sun is not covered by clouds. When the sun is out of sight, we think the sun is set. When the sun is before our eyes, we think that the sun is on the horizon. Actually, the sun is always in its fixed position, but owing to our defective, insufficient senses, we calculate the appearance and disappearance of the sun in the sky. And because Lord Krishna's appearance and disappearance are completely different from that of any ordinary common living entity, it is evident that he is eternal, blissful knowledge by his internal potency, and he is never contaminated by material nature. The Vedas also confirm that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is unborn, yet he still appears to take his birth in multi-manifestations. The Vedic supplementary literatures also confirm that even though the Lord appears to be taking his birth, he is still without change of body. In the Bhagavatam, he appears before his mother as Narayan, with four hands and the decorations of the six kinds of full opulences. His appearance in his original eternal form is his causeless mercy bestowed upon the living entities, so they can concentrate on the Supreme Lord as he is, and not on mental concoctions or imaginations which the impersonalist wrongly thinks the Lord's forms to be. So, just one point I want to make about Krishna's appearance before his mother, Devaki. He manifested himself as Narayan, then the extra two hands disappeared, and then he manifested himself as a Krishna baby. So, Krishna was just showing that he actually is the Supreme Lord to his mother, just to assure his mother that everything would be all right, because she was in a prison house, and it was predicted that when Krishna was born, he was going to be killing the king. The king's name was Kamsa, so therefore she and her husband were imprisoned. There's a whole story of that in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Very important to understand that. The word Maya or Atma Maya refers to the Lord's causeless mercy according to the Vishvakosha dictionary. The Lord is conscious. So Maya, the word Maya can be illusion, it can mean energy, and can mean mercy. It means different things in different contexts. The Lord is conscious of all his previous appearances and disappearance, but a common living entity forgets everything about his past body as soon as he gets another body. He is the Lord of all living entities. Because he performs wonderful and superhuman activities while he is on this earth. Therefore, the Lord is always the same absolute truth and is without differentiation between his form and self or between his quality and body. A question may now be raised as to why the Lord appears and disappears in this world. This is explained in the next verse. So, let's see what we're going to explain here. Yeah. So, Krishna is the same as his body. There's no difference between him and his body. It's not a dualistic concept. There is a difference between us and our body. Body changes, we change bodies. In the spiritual world, we have an eternal spiritual body. We are an eternal spiritual body that is non-different from us, and it doesn't change, just like Krishna. But here, we've taken this artificial identity, like one takes, and again, I'm going to use that example of virtual reality, like that movie The Matrix, which some of you may have seen, where there's a virtual reality, people plugged into a computer, and they take a body inside that computer. Of course, in that movie, they took a body that was similar to their actual physical body, which usually is not the case. Or nowadays, they have this thing, you can take an avatar, you can choose your avatar and enter into a virtual world. There's this whole virtual world, which I mentioned many times before, that's called Second Life, where there's something, at least when I tried it out, there were like 10 million people in that virtual world. And I even ran into some of my disciples in that virtual world who looked different than their actual or physical body looked during this lifetime. And I introduced myself. Hey, Gopal, is that you? That's me, Guru Dev. And I met him at my at the Hare Krishna temple inside the virtual world. And people were selling dhotis and saris and all sorts of things in the virtual world, in the virtual temple. So that's where we are right now. We're in this so-called virtual world. It's real in one sense, just like the virtual world has some sort of reality, but it's temporary. So we want an eternal world where it's permanent. Okay, and we'll do one more verse. And this verse is actually very important. The reason why Krishna appears, not all the reasons why Krishna appears, but the exoteric reason why Krishna appears. So, yada yada hi dharmasya, glanir bhavati bharata, abhyutanam dharmasya, tadatmanam, trijamyaham. Yada yada, just look at one thing, okay. Yada yada, whenever and wherever he, certainly dharmasya, of religion, glani, discrepancies, bhavati, become manifested, bharata, O descendant of bharata, abhyutanam, a predominance, a dharmasya, of religion, irreligion, tada, at that time, atmanam, self, shujami, manifest, aham I. So Krishna gives one of the reasons why he comes to this world. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and the predominant rise of irreligion, at that time, I descend myself. And Prabhupada, someone's trying to send me a chat message, let me just see here. I shouldn't try to do that in the middle. Oh, yeah. That was Gopal who sent me a message. He said it was my fault that I told him to go to Second Life, not his fault. Okay. I take the blame for that. So, anyway. Whoops. Let's go back here. So, purport. The word Srijami is significant herein. Srijami cannot be used in the sense of creation because according to the previous verse, there is no creation of the Lord's form or body, since all these forms are eternally existent. Therefore, Srijami means that the Lord manifests himself as he is. Although the Lord appears on schedule, namely at the end of Dwapara Yuga of the 28th millennium, the 7th Manu, this is just a time thing, one of the millenniums, and Manu, and one day of Brahma. Anyway, we'll get into this later on in the Gita, describing what millenniums are, what day of Lord Brahma is, and how many Manus in one day of Lord Brahma. He has no obligation to adhere to such rules and regulations because he is completely free to act in many ways at his will. He therefore appears by his own will whenever there is a predominance of irreligiosity and disappearance of true religion. Principles of religion are laid down in the Vedas, and any discrepancy in the matter of properly executing the rules of the Vedas makes one irreligious. And the Bhagavatam is stated that such principles are the laws of the Lord. Only the Lord can manufacture a system of religion. That's important. Only Krishna can manufacture, not a theologian. The Vedas are also accepted as originally spoken by the Lord himself to Brahma from within his heart. Therefore, the principles of Dharma or religion are the direct orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Dharmam tu sakshat Bhagavat pranitam. That means Dharma or religion comes directly from the Supreme Lord. That's from the Bhagavatam, 6th canto, 3rd chapter, text 19. These principles are clearly indicated throughout the Bhagavad Gita. The purpose of the Vedas is to establish those principles under the order of the Supreme Lord, and the Lord directly orders at the end of the Gita that the highest principle of religion is to surrender unto him only and nothing more. The Vedic principles push one towards complete surrender unto him. And whenever such principles are disturbed by the demoniac, the Lord appears. From the Bhagavatam, we understand that Lord Buddha is the incarnation of Krishna who appeared when materialism was rampant and materialists were using the pretext of the authority of the Vedas. Although there are certain restrictive rules and regulations regarding animal sacrifice for particular purposes in the Vedas, people of demonic tendency still took to animal sacrifice without reference to Vedic principles. In other words, those animal sacrifices were actually done and the animal was immediately given a new body, a higher body, usually a human body. Lord Buddha appeared to stop this nonsense and to establish the Vedic principles of nonviolence. Therefore, each and every avatar or incarnation of the Lord, avatar means down crosser, or incarnation of the Lord has a particular mission and they are all described in the revealed scriptures. No one should be accepted as an avatar unless he is referred to by scriptures. It is not a fact that the Lord appears only in Indian soil. He can manifest himself anywhere and everywhere and whenever he desires to appear. In each and every incarnation he speaks as much about religion as can be understood by the particular people under their particular circumstances. It's called Desha Kala Patra, time, place, and circumstance. But the mission is the same, to lead people to God consciousness and obedience to the principles of religion. Sometimes he descends personally and sometimes he sends his bona fide representative, that's the Shaktivesha avatar I mentioned before, in the form of his son or servant or himself in some disguised form. The principles of Bhagavad Gita are spoken to Arjuna, and for that matter to other highly elevated persons, because he was highly advanced compared to ordinary persons in other parts of the world. 2 + 2 = 4 is a mathematical principle that is true in the beginner's arithmetic class and in the advanced class as well. Still, there are higher and lower mathematics. In all incarnations of the Lord, therefore, the same principles are taught, but they appear to be higher and lower in varied circumstances. The higher principles of religion begin with the acceptance of the four orders and the four statuses of social life. That's called Varnashram. We talked about that in a previous class. That is, whether one is a Brahmin, likes teaching, a Kshatriya, likes to be in charge, or Vaishya, likes to make money through commerce, and engages in agriculture and cow protection, or one is a Shudra, one likes to work with their hands. And the four statuses of social life, that means whether one is a single student, or one is married, or one is retired, or one is completely renounced as a sannyasi. And Prabhupada said the higher principles of religion begin is when we designate society in this way so that everybody's happy and engaged properly. It's for the people's benefit, it's not to discriminate against anybody. As we explain later, the whole purpose of the mission of incarnations is to arouse Krishna consciousness everywhere. Such consciousness is manifest and unmanifest only under different circumstances. And I just want to add one little thing, as I mentioned in the beginning, that that's one of the reasons why Krishna comes down. And that's not the only reason, because this protecting the devotees, annihilating the miscreants, establishing religious principles can be done by someone who is empowered by Krishna. It could be done by other people. Krishna doesn't need to bother to come to this world. But he comes to this world because he actually enjoys loving exchanges with his devotees and certain rasas. When we go to the nectar devotion, we'll get into this more deeply. He likes certain types of exchanges that are not there in the spiritual world. There's the direct rasas, which we mentioned in terms of the passive adoration of God, the servitude of God, the friendship of God, the parental relationship with God, and also the conjugal relationship with God. And then there's indirect rasas, such as shock, humor, even ghastliness, and chivalry. And some of them, Krishna comes down to enjoy in this world while he's carrying out this annihilating the mystery and stuff. Sometimes he even has his devotees come down to act like demons so that Krishna can fight with them. Because Krishna likes to have a good fight. And that happened in the case of Hiranyakashipu, who was a devotee before and is a devotee. And also Hiranyaksha and Ravana and Kumbhakarna and Dantavakra and Shishupal. And we won't describe each and every one of them right now. So it's time just to take a few questions because we're running a little late. Tomorrow we'll start with number 8. So we'll stop sharing the screen. And then we will unmute you in a second. Hold on 1 second. It just takes 1 second to unmute everybody. Or not exactly unmute you, but to give you the opportunity of unmuting yourself so you can ask a question. All right.
Hi, Vishnu Gurudev. This is
Shri. Hey, okay. What's the question?
My question is, when we actually do Krishna consciousness activity, you know, like chanting and hearing from you, all this activity also under virtual reality because I have this body?
All this activity is what?
I mean, all this Krishna conscious activities, devotional service, which I'm doing with this body, you know.
Yeah.
But also, is it under the illusion or is it a real thing? Because I have this material body, I still not, you know.
No, that's a real thing because you're engaged, you're voluntarily engaging your material body in Krishna service. That's devotional service. It's not only the one using the spiritual body to serve Krishna. And also, when you engage your material body in Krishna's service, the body becomes spiritualized. So that is devotional service. And then later on, as you advance in devotional service, then you serve Krishna internally in your spiritual body at the same time you're doing the service externally in your physical body.
Thank you, Guru.
Okay. Yep. All right, who has a question? Who else has a quick question?
Hare Krishna, Gurudev, Pranam.
Oh, yeah. Nalini Kant. Thought you'd never make it. So what's up?
Gurudev, can you please explain us about disguised form of Krishna?
Disguised form of Krishna basically means when Krishna appears in a different way other than two hands playing a flute. I mean, for example, one time Krishna wanted to hide from the gopis and he disguised himself by manifesting his form as Lord Vishnu. And so that was a disguised form. And sometimes in Krishna Leela, Krishna even like dresses up as a lady to disguise himself to get away with some trick. So this is another disguised form. So don't think that your family or your wife is a disguised form of Krishna. although she might like you to think like that. Anyway, so
thank you.
She's actually Krishna and you haven't realized it yet. No. So that's what it means. I mean, Krishna sometimes puts on disguise or appears in his other incarnations. Like when Krishna appears as Govardhan Hill, that's like a disguised form. It's directly Krishna, but Krishna's appearing that way. Disguise means that some people don't recognize it. Other people may recognize it. That's Krishna. If you read some of the works of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, you hear about many times when Krishna put on different disguises.
Yeah.
Okay. Other question? Yeah.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is he coming in a devotee form?
Yeah, actually, sometimes Lord Chaitanya is described as a disguised form. Chana avatar is the words used. He's a hidden avatar. Mm-hmm. So actually, it's Krishna. That's Krishna in disguised form.
Okay.
Of course, I'm able to see through his disguises by the mercy of Prabhupada. That's Krishna, where some people are not able to see through his disguise.
Mm.
Okay?
Thank you.
So, one other question, and then we'll end. If anyone has a question.
Hare Krishna, Gurudev.
Who is that? Wait a second. Who's asking a question?
Sumukha.
Oh, Sumukha. Oh, you're driving a car. Okay.
Yes, Gurudev. I have one small question, Gurudev.
Yeah.
It's regarding, you know, when you deal with devotees in the temple, we know that we have so many advanced devotees in our temple in Suba. And sometimes, you know, they try to, you know, boss you around, you know, say, hey, come and do this, hey, come and do that, you know. And it's okay with me, but my wife gets disturbed, you know. So how to deal with this kind of situation through there?
I would say, please use the words please and thank you. And please, I would actually talk to them. I said, when you're asking someone to do something, you say, if you are willing to do this, would you be willing to do this? I mean, I think at a certain point, you have to sit down and talk to people to ask them to, I mean, it has to be some peaceful talk. Not on the fly, not when you're just like running around doing something. But I would say, would you be willing to sit with me in the office and have a talk someday? Let's make an appointment. Now, usually when you have some discussion like this, if there's some correction that needs to be made, if you're doing it while you're running around doing something else, it's not going to come out well. Or if you do it by sending someone an email, it's not going to come out well. Or a text message is not going to come out well. So the best thing is to meet face-to-face in a very peaceful situation, maybe over dinner, and be able to express yourself in those situations. But it just won't work out. It won't work out if you just do it like at the moment.
No, actually, we are not telling others, but others are telling us.
I know. That's what I meant. So you go and you say to others who are telling you things to do, and you say, yeah, I know who you're talking about. Don't make it public. I know the Suva Temple very well. So then you say, can I have a private meeting with you sometime? And then just you together without anyone else there, you reveal your heart and your mind. But otherwise, if you do it in public or if you do it, you know, while you're trying to do something else or while they're passionately running around doing something, it's not going to end up very well. So it's good to express yourself. That's what I find. Let's have a meeting. And don't use email and don't use text messages. Just try to schedule a meeting. Sometimes they'll say, oh, we're too busy to have a meeting. We're running around doing this, that. Just say, please, I need to have a meeting with you. That's all. Just you, or maybe if the person's married, you and your husband or something like that, or whatever. But you need to peacefully sit down. Usually, best time to approach someone is after they've eaten. Before they eat, people are very agitated. And after they eat, they're just like willing to accept anything. It's when they have a full stomach. Like if you do it 15 minutes after they eat is the ideal time. If you wait too long, it's not good. So whenever I want something from someone that's really serious, I ask them, have you eaten yet? And if they said, no, I haven't eaten, I said, I'll call you back a little while. And I wait until they eat. There's a saying in Spanish, barriga llena, corazón contenta. When the stomach is full, your heart is content. So remember the stomach.
Okay.
That's my stomach advice for today. Okay. That's it. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. See everybody later. Om Tat Sat.